Well, everybody off and running on the Great Eclipse Day 2024. Keep our fingers crossed for the millions of people who are hoping for some fairly clear skies, enough that they can see the total eclipse of the sun. Saw some of the pictures already from Matsalan was the first place in North America to get the total eclipse, and they lucked out. There had been, they were thinking it would have been fog and everything. They had a really clear morning. So we're off and running on Monday, April the 8th, 2024, the Buckmaster Show. We're in our 14th year now with our radio project and our 36th year coming to you first on TV and now radio. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. Very proud of the fact that we're part of Bustos Media, which has now a growing presence here on the media landscape. We've got five radio stations under one roof here, and this one, of course, KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to our program live on my website, buckmastershow.com. It is also the place for all of our podcasts, very conveniently archived, probably got about 97% of all the shows we have done over the past full 13 years. At buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services and hanging systems. That means after you get your stuff beautifully done by Mo, framed, and you don't want it, well, you don't want to get up on the ladder, let Mo do it. He'll make a house call, make sure it goes up exactly where you want it to be. Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and they're also on the web at mosgallery.com. Our Monday one-on-one today, Rob Elias is here. Rob is the president and CEO of the Tucson, growing Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Rob took over about 3 years ago, and we're going to hear from him on and what's going on with the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Hey, Rob, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. I want to learn more about the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. I know that in your 3 years, really there were some real challenges when you took over. The organization went through some, some growing pains and maybe reorganization. But you took over at a time when the financials were not in a good position. What's the overview right now, 3 years later, Rob?
Well, Bill, thanks so much for the question. And I would be remiss to not say thank you so much for what you do for the community.
Having a
radio show like yours that highlights people and organizations that are trying to do an amazing job for this community and to make it the best it can be. Thank you for that. So I really appreciate what you do. To answer your question, we are doing just phenomenal work, and we are so proud of the work that we are doing within the organization, trying to advocate for businesses, either through our influence with elected officials, with our marketing efforts, and our growing network. We have over 1,500 members now in Tucson and Southern Arizona, and even into Mexico, and we're not even really trying to grow membership in Mexico. It's just kind of happening organically. Mm-hmm. But because of our relationships with the Mexican government and the advocacy efforts that we have with the collaborations that we have between Arizona and Mexico, they love the work that we're doing and say they want to be a part of that. So we are so thrilled with the efforts that our team is making, and we look forward to continuing this thing going forward.
You did turn the situation around after 1 year, the financial situation, and the membership is now up to, I believe, as you said, 1,500. Is one of the stronger Hispanic chambers? I don't know how many there are around the country, but would you categorize it, Rob Elias, as one of the stronger ones?
Certainly. Just because of For a number of reasons. Yeah. Number one, our proximity to the border makes us very influential in Washington, D.C., and the fact that we are the largest Latino-based organization in the state of Arizona makes us very influential. It's not just the size; it's the relationships that we cultivate along the way. So the relationships that we have with our members, we have a 97% retention rate right now with members. Our reputation has been growing and has gotten better over the last 3 years, not just with the community at large, but with our elected officials at the state level, local level, and even at the federal level. So it's the relationships that we're building along the way, and treating people right is really what's causing our growth.
What's your selling point when you talk to people about the chamber? What do you say? How can it benefit their particular business?
Well, number one, we always try to find out what the member is needing from us, or what the prospective member is needing from us. We never say that we're going to deliver something that we know we can't. And so I think our authenticity speaks for itself. But also the main thing that we talk about is you have an opportunity to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. Yes, we will improve your business. We will help your business grow. And at the same time, you're helping a community grow as well. And that's just as important as somebody's individual business growing. Yeah, we're going to talk about your financials. We're going to talk about what you're needing for your business to succeed. And then we're going to talk about what the community needs and how important it is to give back.
What does the community need from your perspective, Rob?
We need a number of things, Bill. I'm very optimistic at what the future holds with it. We still need more open lines of communication with our elected officials in an authentic way without sounding divisive. We need to realize when an elected official that we may not agree with politically does something right, we need to say that. If they do something wrong, even the ones that we agree with or align with politically, we need to say they did something wrong too. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we need. Is just we need to be more authentic with each other, and we're getting there. I'm very optimistic in the direction that we're going, but there are a whole host of issues. People, businesses still need access to knowledge, education. They need access to capital. And they need access to each other. And so we feel as a Chamber of Commerce, we can provide those things. We are the connector in the community, as well as the other fantastic chambers that we have in this region that we think we know that we do a really great job at that.
I think some of our listeners may be surprised about the demographics. Talk a little bit about how Hispanic heritage has grown in this community.
It's grown astronomically. I mean, we're at 43% Hispanic descent in Tucson and Southern Arizona right now. We are the majority minority in the community. The next, second largest population to Latinos are Caucasian or white, and they're about 37%. Hmm. So we are the largest demographic and culture in this region.
How is that going to change from a business point of view? I guess. Maybe to answer my own question, you can tell me if it's right or wrong, but businesses really cannot ignore the Hispanic audience and expect to survive.
Right.
Am I right on with that one?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, 100%. And that's something that people have known for years. How we're going to see the landscape shape, because this trending is not shrinking, it's just growing. The disparity or the growth that Hispanics are going to see over the next 5 to 10 years from population is going to be exponential. And so what we're going to see from the business lens is because Latinos are more prone to being entrepreneurs, to open their own businesses, they want to control their own schedule, they want to create generational wealth for themselves and their families, we're going to see a lot more small businesses open, whether they be food trucks, or whether it be accounting agencies, or engineers, or doctors. We're going to see a lot more of that within the next 5 to 10 years. On top of that, the consumer spending is going to increase as well. So we think these are very positive things for the region.
You were One of those featured prominently when National Public Radio did a story. Actually, it spent a couple of days at the border, and you talked about how the, well, you describe when people often generalize, well, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, maybe certain images come to mind that are myths, really, and not accurate.
Yeah, there's quite a number of those, Bill, to be honest with you.
Yes.
I mean, if I spoke about them all, we'd be here all day. But I think one of the biggest misnomers that people think about the Hispanic Chamber is that we're this progressive organization that only cares about societal issues or social issues. Yes, we do care about them, but from a standpoint of how they impact our economy, how they impact commerce, and all of them do. Even social issues that we've had stemming back to Jim Crow impacted the economy within certain regions of the country. And so we do highlight a lot of those things, but we're not this ultra-progressive organization that believes that borders should be wide open. And I think that's just one of the big misconceptions that people have once they see the word Hispanic in our title, that we're an organization that believes in those types of things, and that's just not true.
When people do see the word Hispanic, and business owners should realize that the Tucson Hispanic Chamber is open to everybody. I think we need to clarify that.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the things that we like to say at the chamber is that we believe that big ideas should be cultivated by all to benefit all. And we are so proud of that. But we still get the questions, Bill. We've been around since 1989, mm-hmm. and we still get the question or get the comment, I'd love to join the Hispanic Chamber, but I'm not Latino. I'm not
sure
Hispanic.
You get that almost every day.
We do. And so we enjoy telling the narrative of you don't have to be. Do you have consumers that are Hispanic? Do you have employees that are Hispanic? Do you hope to attract a Hispanic audience? And if that's the case, then you should be a part of our organization, because we have quite a bit of influence within the greater landscape of the Southern Arizona economy, not just amongst Latinos.
We're going to pause right here with Rob Elias. He is our Monday one-on-one guest. Rob has been for the last 3 years president and CEO of the growing, and I would say a very dynamic force now in our Tucson economy, the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. But right now I want to talk a little bit about our favorite bakery in town. It's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. As usual, they had a very busy weekend, stopped by and saw Steve, the owner, on Saturday. They do open at 6:30. Of course, breakfast is their signature, but they're doing lunch as well. And they're also, as an added enhancement, now have that liquor license, and they are utilizing it. So you can have a beer with your lunch or a mimosa with your breakfast at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. We'll be right back with Rob Elias. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. When we do our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It is our Monday one-on-one. Very proud of the fact that every Monday, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing believes in great dialogue, and they sponsor our one-on-one. And our one-on-one guest today, Rob Elias. Rob is the president and CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. He's been at the helm now 3 years, really has turned the organization into a, first of all, they're out of the red ink, and he actually accomplished that his first year, and he's growing the membership and is very sensitive to the needs of the 1,500 businesses that are part of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Rob, what are some of the things that, I know you're real active in the community, what are some of the things you've been partnering with different groups about events that you're especially proud of?
Well, thanks for letting me talk about that, Bill, because there are a number of things that we're incredibly proud of. Hispanic Heritage Month, of course, is a really big deal for us. It's probably our biggest time of the year because we're frequently asked to speak at things or attend things and host things. But we host a very meaningful event that we're really proud of called Hispanic Market Outlook. And what this event was designed to do is to share with the public, whoever attends, and even after the fact, we release the report, basically a state of the economy from a lens of from a Hispanic perspective. And attached to this event, and we partner with Telemundo on that, by the way, and attached to this event, we always incorporate a keynote speaker. And prior to my arrival, we had some pretty great keynote speakers that were local people, and they did a wonderful job. I kind of wanted to change that a little bit when I got here and bring people in to give a fresh perspective that we didn't always have access to. Mm-hmm. So the first speaker that I brought was former HUD Secretary Julian Castro. Oh, he also ran for president as well. That was a very, very pivotal moment within the course of the beginning of me being in this position. Since then, we brought the inventor of the Flaming Hot Cheetos. His name is Richard Montañez. He went from janitor at PepsiCo to vice president.
Wow.
And also invented the Flaming Hot Cheetos. So we had him speak. That was wonderful. And last year we had Cheech Marin, who, of course, everybody knows from the Cheech and Chong movies.
Of course.
But people don't understand that he is also the largest collector of Chicano art in the world.
Is he really?
He is. And he has his own museum and gallery in Riverside, California. And he came and spoke to us from the heart about what Latino art has meant to him and why it resonates with him.
Hmm. When is this year's event?
It'll be in late September or early October. We haven't nailed down the date yet.
Because Hispanic Heritage Month is September, correct?
It's September 15th through October 15th.
Yes, and we've got, of course, May, Cinco de Mayo, coming up. And by the way, that Monday, right after Cinco de Mayo weekend, we will have the consul from the Consul of Mexico, representing Mexico.
Wonderful.
Here in the United States and in Tucson. I assume we've got a pretty good relationship with him.
Absolutely.
We've had him on the show before. He's a really dynamic young guy.
He is, yeah. He has a heart of gold and incredibly knowledgeable. He's a wonderful diplomat. Let's hope he stays here for a long time.
Yeah, I hope so too. So what are some of the things now on your agenda? I know you go back to D.C., but what are you hoping for? What's kind of at the top of your, what have you moved to the front burner, some issues? Of course, migration is not going away. Unfortunately, we just seem to kick the can down the road. But what else is on your agenda?
Yeah, immigration certainly is something we've been kicking the can down the road for decades, and it's not a single political party or administration that has done it. We've been doing it for decades now. So that's one that's just unavoidable. And so we're always going to be talking about that, and people always have questions about that. Education is something that we really love discussing as well, not just at the higher education level, but also K through 12. We think that's vitally important, and we're glad to see that more funds have been allocated to education in this state. And we love it so much, Bill, that we're actually hosting an event in June, and this is the first time I'm saying it publicly. We host an event every year called the Summit. And in the past 2 years, we've had seven mayors from both Arizona and Mexico attend this event, including both governors, Governor Hobbs and Governor Durazo from Sonora. This year, because it's campaign season in Mexico, the mayors are either running for re-election or they're terming out. And we knew this was the case, so we're changing it around a little bit, and we're going to do a summit that features university presidents.
Oh.
So we have all three university presidents from Arizona coming to Tucson, and we have three presidents from Mexico coming as well.
Hmm. How is the relationship with Pima? They're doing such great work in workforce development, really tailoring the needs of a particular company that comes to town, trying to provide a skilled workforce.
Pima is an amazing institution. The forward-thinking mentality that they have at that institution has just been phenomenal. You can credit to Dr. Lee Lambert for the work that he did. But I don't know if you've been down to that aviation tech park that they have down near the airport, Bill.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is simply incredible. And the jobs that are going to come out of that, people are having job offers before they're even graduating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we want. The automotive center that they have over at the downtown campus, and then that incredible building. I mean, they've pretty much taken up the entire city block now. We are so proud of the work that they do, and we love the fact they're a part of our organization.
How about the Tucson Chamber? How are you working with Michael over there? You two see each other as competition, or do you see each other as a kind of aligning with some of the same thoughts in mind of moving the community forward?
Yeah, the interesting thing about Michael and I is that we don't always align politically on a number of things, and that's perfectly okay, and we respect the heck out of each other because of it. I think the world of Michael. I think the job he's doing is really, really, he's doing a fantastic job. The reason we complement each other so well is because they have strengths, we may be weak in those areas, and where we have strengths, they may be weaker in those areas. So we complement each other really, really well, and collectively as chambers of commerce in the region, not just the Tucson Metro and the Tucson Hispanic, but Oro Valley, Vail, Sahuarita, Marana, Nogales, Graham Greenlee, Sierra Vista. They're actually called Sky Islands now. We all meet monthly to discuss some of the issues that we're seeing in our regions and how collectively we can help influence our elected officials from a policy perspective.
When Michael Guyman has been on the program, and I think we've got him scheduled again for early June, Michael has been very concerned about the shoplifting issue. I'm sure that that is impacting Hispanic merchants as well.
Of course, it I mean, vandalism and theft doesn't see culture or color.
No.
It sees opportunity for people to do things that they shouldn't do. And the work that the Metro Chamber has done within that scope has been incredible and has made whole some of these businesses that have had experienced these losses, whether it be vandalism to their places of business or theft within their business. The work that they've done there has been amazing.
Rob Elias, any final thoughts? How can people find out more about you and the team?
Well, of course, they can go to TucsonHispanicChamber.org to learn more about us. They can give us a call anytime, 520-620-0005. And be a part of something bigger than ourselves. We're really trying to move the needle in this community and in this mega region in a positive way. And that's all I'd like to say about that, Bill. And I'd like to take the rest of my time, whatever few seconds I have left, to again thank you for the work that you do in highlighting meaningful stuff in Tucson, and for being the person that you are. I don't know if your listeners out there have had an opportunity to meet Bill. He's as genuine as it gets, I certainly commend you, and I thank you, and I'm grateful for you in our community.
Well, thank you very much, Rob Elias, President and CEO, Tucson Hispanic Chamber, and also we want to thank Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing for being the sponsor for our special Monday one-on-one segment. Rob, I want to wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on Eclipse Monday. Be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Eclipse Monday. Green Things and Zocalo Village, one of our great sponsors. In fact, they have the naming rights to the Buckmaster Show studio when we're on the air here during the noon hour. Green Things for all of your spring gardening, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a really beautiful 13-acre site. The owners, good friends of mine, Jan and Jack, they personally oversee the operation. And Jan's buying trips, she's brought back some incredible pottery from all over the world as part of the Zocalo Village part of the business. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. They're in their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, folks calling us at 790-2040, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's always a pleasure to welcome Dr. Albrecht Clausen to our radio program. We try to get him on every 4 to 6 weeks. That's kind of the goal, but this man is very busy and travels the world. In fact, just got in yesterday, after a 3-day visit to Belgium. So, I mean, he is a guy on the man on the move, renowned scholar of medieval history. Dr. Clausen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's published more than 100 scholarly books and hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry. Or is it 13 now?
No, not quite. The next one is in the works.
Okay,
yes.
It's all right. I'll continue then with my introduction. 4 volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many honors. My favorite is Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He is the editor-in-chief of the International Online Journal, which is titled Humanities. He has so many books to his credit, just to name a couple of them that we like: Wisdom from the Middle Ages. We've talked to him extensively about that book. We've talked to him extensively about Humanities in the 21st Century. And his latest effort is a fascinating book. I learn something every day on this radio program, and that's one of the reasons I do it. I did not realize there were travel writers in 1350. So his latest book is an account of the Oriental world by an anonymous Low German writer, and it's a translation from basically a travelogue from 1350. And one other item that is very important, and maybe I need to move this up to the top, very close to the top for his introduction in the future. In the fall of 2022, he spent a wonderful semester in Cairo, Egypt, as a Fulbright scholar, which is a huge honor to be a Fulbright scholar. Always a pleasure, Dr. Clausen.
Thank you, Bill, for inviting me, and it's always wonderful for me to have the chance to talk with you about history, culture, and also thereby to bring the value of the humanities back to the public.
I was thinking about the eclipse, and you can't miss it. Millions of people are experiencing right now a total eclipse. And I'm wondering, you know, back in before media, I'm wondering if people were, in your particular area in the Middle Ages, They were pretty savvy to the celestial situation. Were they that? Do you think they might have been really freaked out about total eclipses, or maybe not so much?
Well, I think if you differentiate between the scholars, the scientists who already existed at that time
and knew about these things,
they knew about it, they could predict it, and they had a general idea what was happening. They did not have, of course, our modern notion. They lived still very much in the geocentric world. That means for them, the Earth was the center of the universe, and everything else revolved around it. So that took another 300-400 years till Kepler came, Galileo Galilei, to change that to the heliocentric worldview. But within that narrow worldview, they still had a very clear idea about the planets. They had a very constructive view. They saw everything in harmony, a very interesting notion.
Some of the earliest eclipses in the Middle Ages were actually predicted, almost pinpointed exactly.
Well, because they had calendars, they knew certain things. After all, they had history available. Mm-hmm. And actually, I need to say that also, particularly the Europeans were deeply influenced by the Arabs, and the Arabs were deeply influenced by the ancient Greeks. So there's a constant flow of mm-hmm. knowledge, mm-hmm. which we don't even realize anymore, but translations then made available enormous amount of knowledge then already then in the 12th century, at a time, oddly enough, when the Arabs kind of declined a little bit in the wake of the Crusades, and then the Christian scientists emerged, also medical scholars. So it's a very much a movement in flux. So,
but the people that were not in the scholarly world, I'm sure it must have just been an absolute shock. Suddenly the things turned dark, and it That's has right. to have been frightening. And I wonder about people that might have gone blind. I mean, they didn't have these solar eclipse glasses, and they didn't know about these
things.
That's
right. Yeah. But I would like to emphasize that we have today millions of people who believe in all kinds of myths and funny things, and they're completely ignorant and totally victims to any kind of media source that conveys some general idea. So, there are people who are superstitious, there are people who believe in all kinds of witchcraft, people who believe in conspiracy theories.
I know.
That comes together. So the depth of ignorance is infinite, and I think in the Middle Ages they were not that worse off than people today.
And you've written about the myths of the Middle Ages, and it might be worth pointing out a few of them right now.
Well, it is a very interesting notion about history in general. So when we look back, we tend today always to paint the past in very negative terms. We always want to see ourselves at the peak of human development, so the belief in progress. So we are better than our parents were better than our grandparents, and so forth and so forth. So let's say they liked today very much to still associate the Middle Ages with the myth of the flat earth. I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
There is still a flat earth society out there.
It is, yeah, absolutely. Crazy. And it's so crazy because anyone who can stand at the shore will see that the ship goes down at the horizon.
Yes.
So no scientist whatsoever believed in the flat earth. He's a wonderful example. There's sort of a facetious story that was told throughout times when a bishop wants to hurt his priest and tells him, where is the center of the earth? And the priest says, very quickly, right here, prove it to me, which means the earth is round, because whenever the earth is round, every point can be the center of
yeah,
the
of
entire
course.
Earth. So even popular stories were predicated on the understanding of the round earth, the globe. We should not sort of be so negative about the allegedly dumb and dark ages.
Before we leave the eclipse, you've got a kind of an interesting story about a German traveler or what?
Yeah, so we're talking now about a lunar eclipse.
Okay.
And I know this account because I've researched this. There was a man from the town where I graduated from, actually Marburg in Germany, mm-hmm. and he was sent to Brazil on behalf of the emperor to explore things. And we're talking about 1520 mm-hmm. or so. And he was taken prisoner or slave by the local Indians in Brazil and was supposed to be eaten. So they were about preparing him.
He was on the menu. Uh-oh.
Yes. And in his desperation, you know, he saw the fire, the boiling pots and everything horrible. But then he predicted a lunar eclipse. And that came to happen. He was right. And everyone was so horrified and impressed that they let him go. So he was released and could go home. Although while he was still with them, he observed how some other French slaves were slaughtered and then boiled, or not even slaughtered and just boiled, whatever. I'm a horrible thing.
Oh. Before we take the break, how about the new book about the travel writing from 1350? So folks were traveling and they were documenting it, correct?
We would even say today that medieval roads were filled
really?
With travelers. You had masons, architects, medical doctors, artists. You had pilgrims. You had crusaders, merchants. You had Jews traveling everywhere, bankers. You had diplomats everywhere.
These roads were well-established, and there were services probably along the way
everywhere
to cater to travelers.
Absolutely. You have the horses, you have the donkeys, the mules. All those cannot really travel more than, let's say, 60 miles a day. Then they're really exhausted. They need to have hay or water or straw or whatever. So it all was really fairly well-developed, relatively speaking, a good network, which mm-hmm. made it possible for millions of people to travel.
So you translated this account.
This was a really fascinating account. We don't know who this author really was. He wrote in Low German, so middle Low German. So this is not even my normal language I'm dealing with, middle High German. So it's a kind of a dialect variant. And it's
kind of a street language.
No. Sort of Cologne area, you know.
Low. I was thinking of, okay,
yes.
All right.
So
all right.
Let's say close to Dutch.
Okay, I got
gotcha.
You.
In that sense. And the interesting thing is he lived there in Cairo. So the cover of this book is my own photo of one of the major mosques. And he provides us then with detailed accounts of food, stuff, animals, fauna, flora, politics, cultural events, the court life, and so forth. So it's really a fascinating window into the past. And we kind of feel like, we can understand this.
Another myth that medieval people or people from the Middle Ages, living in the Middle Ages, never left their village. All right, we'll take a break right here. Albrecht Claassen is with us, Dr. Claassen. He's got his very, very popular book, early book lecture series coming up. We'll talk about that when we continue right after this break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a great getaway. Only about a three-hour drive, and there is a ton of things to do. Outdoor activities, well, they've got them. The Gila National Wilderness, the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument is just north of Silver City. And we've got Dr. Albrecht Clausen with me, and I just had a thought about the Cliff Dwellings. That's almost like early Middle Ages, Dr. Clausen.
Absolutely. I find it always so hilarious. I'm talking to my European colleagues about the Middle Ages. And
it's not only Europe.
We have Wupatki, we have Tuziku, Montezuma's Castle, and on and on and on. Walnut Canyon. This is all medieval, if you will.
It is. I'm really glad that that came up. Yes. I was thinking, you know, we've got our own little Middle Ages history right
Glorious development. And again, we think they were all very primitive. No, they had cities, they had water, they had agriculture, sophisticated masonry, and so forth.
Yeah, and they had incredible pottery. The museum at Western New Mexico University in Silver City, they've redone the museum. It's gorgeous. They have the finest collection of the Mimbres pottery in the world there at the Western New Mexico University in Silver City. You can find out more by visiting their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Albrecht Clausen with us, renowned scholar of medieval history from the University of Arizona and Fulbright Scholar. Your early book lecture series, you've been doing this how many years now?
It's 20 years. We started...
Is this the 20th anniversary year?
Yeah, uh-huh. So we started 2004. We had 1 year break because of COVID-19, but otherwise we had, every year. So I'm very proud of this, particularly because we live in a time when sort of the book itself is a little bit at risk. And we are trying just to combat this negative attitude and show the absolute beauty and value of books.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up about book at risk. When the internet started doing the Kindle books and reading everything on the internet, there was concern that people would actually not be buying books, stop reading books.
But that's no longer the case. That's very odd because, look at the book that I just brought with. That's nicely bound.
It's beautiful.
It's very solid.
It's a nice looking book.
For eternity almost.
Yeah.
And you have really very, very beautiful books. I just saw a wonderful bookstore in Ghent.
In Belgium.
Oh my God, was it beautiful.
Wonderful.
A mix
history
of beautiful books.
Oh my goodness.
So glorious. But we do have special collections. That is a wing in our university library where they hold in a true bank safe, the most valuable items, medieval manuscripts, facsimiles, incunabula, early modern prints. And we bring out some of the best, including Shakespeare's
folio. They got
folio.
The real thing then.
Yes, we got a lot of the real things. So we're trying to bring back the love and admiration for these books, but not just aesthetically. I think that's very important. We need to keep in mind these books have value because of their content.
Not just beautiful art objects.
Exactly. Otherwise, we would just aestheticize these things.
Put them in an art museum and forget it, right?
And forget about them. So what we try to do, for example, tomorrow, one of my colleagues who lives at the Academy Village, former professor at University of Utah, we'll talk about the law book and how they practiced law and how this was illustrated.
Wow.
We have some medical books, very important and very interesting information. I will talk about books of ours, the religious and spiritual dimension and the reflection of social reality in the later Middle Ages. And my two colleagues in English will talk about Shakespeare and the folio edition of Shakespeare.
So it's Tuesdays?
Tuesdays, 6 o'clock p.m., and the public is invited. It is free of charge. There's always then a reception afterwards, and the talks will be about 50 minutes or so, then questions and answers, and we can look at some read of the most beautiful items right there.
So the venue is?
Special Collections. That's the east wing of the University of Arizona Library. There is enough parking nearby in the Cherry
Street.
It's not
too far, the parking is.
No, not at all. And it's a good time, 6 o'clock, so people can come after dinner and really enjoy the absolute beauty and value of books through a historical lens.
All right, I want to talk about your trip because you were in Ghent and Belgium. I love that area, Bruges. And Ghent was, I believe, a textile center in the Middle Ages, wasn't it?
Yeah, they brought in a lot of English wool, refined that wool, dyed it, and then sold it to other markets.
The tapestries.
It's absolutely. And the interesting thing is also in connection with another topic we talked about last time, they were also the center of global trade. So a lot of Asian textiles made their way through the Black Sea, Adriatic Sea, Venice, and then through the southern German imperial cities to Ghent, Bruges, and from there then to England. From England, they imported the raw material, refined them, and sold them the other way around. So we have really nodules of global trade, and that's the reason why Ghent is such a rich city. I mean, it's beautiful. The houses are marvelous, castles, and so forth.
And none of it would have been possible without the transportation system of the water and the waterways.
This was, of course, always much easier. I mean, traveling over land is hard and takes much more effort and much longer. That's still the same today. The international trade relies on the waterways. So, you know, rivers and oceans were always very important for that aspect.
And you were talking, and the conference was about water and waterways. Were some of those original Middle Ages waterways, are they still intact largely, or was that water system different?
We looked at this whole thing a little bit differently because we used what we call today an eco-critical perspective. In the light of modern concerns with our environment, we want to understand the appreciation of water. So we all looked sort of at literary examples, artworks that reflected on water and showed the absolute importance for human life. And I always try to tell my colleagues there, I live in the desert.
Yes.
I know the value of water.
Yeah.
And every drop counts. And so if we can sensitize our readers, our students, and other scholars to the importance of water, we gain more insight and can contribute to the global discussion of environment.
Okay, a couple of things I want to wrap up here before we let you go. The early book lecture series, 6 o'clock at the University of Arizona Library, the main library, and that's in the special collections area. And then there'll be about 50-minute lecture, and then the question and answers, then a reception afterwards. That will be going on for the next
Three Tuesdays. Tomorrow, the 16th, and the 23rd.
And now also about people may be wondering about your book. Where is that available?
This book, this new translation, is available online. Amazon, of course, directly from the publisher, D.S. Brewer. Virtually everywhere available. It is a major publisher, so there is no problem at all to get this. eBay, and you mentioned it.
How long did it take you to translate that?
I would say about 6 to 8 months, and then a long time of revising and doing the research. And the translation is always one part, but the understanding,
sure.
You know, measurements and names of plants, what do they mean, and so forth.
Wow. You're always a busy guy. Dr. Albrecht Claassen, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having this wonderful conversation.
All right. On behalf of the professor and John, who does such a great job on the other side of the glass, want to give him credit as well. I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.